for argument, please.
The next case for argument is 164283, District of South Dakota, Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate of the Lake Traverse Reservation et al. Versus United States Corps of Engineers et al.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Greg Paulson. I represent the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate of the Lake Traverse Reservation. I'm going to use my time to provide some background information and then address final agency action, the statute of limitations, and then the merits. The tribe brought this lawsuit to challenge a road and bridge project that in 2009 caused harm to the water quality of Enemy Swim Lake and likely destroyed tribal cultural resources and burial mounds. In 2010, the Corps issued a decision denying the tribe's Clean Water Act claims for the Corps to regulate Merlin Drake, who was conducting a massive undertaking of constructing and augmenting a one-mile road in the lake's inlets and wetlands. The road is built primarily from fill taken from the excavation of 2,000 feet of lakeshore. Drake originally represented to the Corps that he was constructing the road for farming purposes, but in 2008, the Corps was informed by Drake that the road was built for a second residence. And more recently, Drake informed the tribe that this road and the land will now be sold as lakeshore lots. The 2010 decision reasoned that the road project was not subject to recapture, despite the change in use, did not constitute stacking, and would remain unregulated under the Clean Water Act because, remarkably, the Corps determined that Drake is a farmer. The Corps' 2010 decision also denied the tribe's National Historic Preservation Act claims. The area is rich in cultural and historical resources because Enemy Swim Lake is a part of the tribe's aboriginal territory within the 1867 treaty establishing the Lake Traverse Reservation. And today, approximately 88% of the land is Indian country surrounding the lake, held in trust for the benefit of the tribe and its members.
That has been remanded, right?
No, not the complete National Historic Preservation Act claim. Only a small portion of it that pertains to the final leg of the project where it crosses two small wetlands that drain into the lake. The first two-thirds of the road, or about half of it, which actually crosses most of the wetland and the lake inlet and the water, the court did not review that. And the reason why, even though it was not under a motion to dismiss, the district court said the 2010 decision is not final agency action. I'm not going to reach the whole breadth of your National Historic Preservation Act claim. The tribe's complaint alleges that the Corps' 2010 decision pertained to the Clean Water Act and the National Historic Preservation Act, as well as the Corps' quote, unlawful failure to act, unquote, as set forth in count three, was arbitrary and capricious under the Administrative Procedure Act. In regard to the statute of limitations, the district court's determinations are legally deficient for three reasons. First, the tribe's claims did not accrue when the Corps discussed its regulation of Drake in January 25, 2005 meeting because the tribe had yet to suffer a legal injury as of that date.
Well, tell me about the factual findings of the district court.
In which regard?
Well, that by January 2005, the tribe was already concerned about his activities, not only aware of the injury, but the possibility the Corps' decisions were wrong. Are those reviewed for clearly erroneous?
I believe that's right.
Okay, proceed.
But the legal questions, though, of course, is de novo. But if you read the district court opinion, and I think in the third opinion, it actually then clarified what it held. It never has ever defined what our injury is. The district court never stated what our injury was. And in fact, in the third order, it treats it as synonymous with final agency action, which I think the district court was under the misunderstanding that if there's final agency action, you've been injured. That's why you're here. And typically, I think that's the case. But the facts on the ground changed at a much later date. The world changed when in 2009 and maybe 2008, the whole lakeshore that was supposed to be used for farming, it was now being excavated, it was now being denuded, and all the rolling hills were flattened out. So this lawsuit is about the tribe's injury in 2009 and the Corps' decision in 2010 that Drake's change in intent and activity would not require a permit and the tribe would never be consulted under the National Historic Preservation Act.
Can the recapture provision ever give rise to a cause of action? Isn't it just a request for an enforcement action that is made to the agency?
The recapture, other federal circuit court of appeals say that if you're going to have an exemption, you have to mandatorily meet two requirements. It has to be a farm road. And then secondly, you have to avoid the recapture. So there is no discretion to say, if you want to avoid the recapture, or in their judgment, if you want to avoid the recapture. No, it's in mandatory terms. And so if you take a look at what the Corps' testimony was to the district court, they said, we don't have discretion to issue a farm road exemption to developer. So it was recaptured. Now, the key term, I think, is the change in use. The regulation says change in use. The statute talks about bringing the wetland and the water into a new activity. The Corps' testimony said change in use. The 2010 decision said a change in use. But to more directly answer your question, I think, is that it is mandatory. It's not one of those things like, well, should we do it or not do it? The tribe knows how to bring enforcement discretion questions to the Corps. So, for example, when Merlin Drake recently dredged over 100 feet of cattails, and you have 5 or 6 truckloads of cattails sitting on the bank, we couldn't figure out a mandatory duty to say you had to do this or do that. We respectfully asked them, please, please take charge of this. Do what you can. And that was it. But this matter is so much different than that. This matter is there wasn't a clean slate. But even though there were prior private letter verifications, the Corps can't put its head in the sand and all of a sudden say, hey, we got a change in purpose. Now it's residential. I mean, it's residential, so you tell the Corps, I'm going to cross it. I can't get to this land for use unless I first cross it with a road. That's farming. And then I'm going to build a bridge. That's farming. Hey, now that I'm across, guess what? I'm going to build a residence over there. And before anyone knows that I'm making these determinations and the Corps and do nothing about it, then I'm going to flatten out all the acreage that could be used for farming. You can't even farm it anymore. So a careful review of the tribe's individual claims is very, very important. We do challenge the first 2003 exemption determination, but not for the reasons that we were injured in 2005. The only reason is, and it probably is not our strongest claim, but the only reason we're challenging that at the top to say you should have known in 2003 is once we received the Freedom of Information Act record, we were able to determine that people at the EPA actually questioned it. We didn't know that. That wasn't discussed in January 25th, 2005. Once we found that out, then we said, we got to challenge that too. But that's a litigation decision done way down the road. Our most important claims are, of course, recapture. There was never discussed in 2005. It's not in the administrative record at all before you. It's not there. I've looked. We've searched and looked. We brought it to the Corps' attention during the first consultation for which you have a transcript. And the Corps said, this has got gray area written all over it. We need to do some homework here. We will get back to you. So they said we're going to consider recapture. That was the first time. The tribe stacking claim could not accrue on January 25, 2005 because the Corps had yet to stack any verifications. As of January 25, 2005, there wasn't a second application even, nor a second verification. It is undisputable that Drake's project proceeded piecemeal, but as of January 25, 2005, the Corps had yet to stack its private letter of verifications. The verifications could not, indeed, take into account any of the matters decided in 2010. Recapture, stacking.
Now, the district court on the stacking addressed the merits, right? It didn't do that just on statute of limitations, correct?
They addressed a small picture of stacking. They only looked at the last leg of that, and that's a really important thing for the tribe. This is one road. You look at that 2010 image, that is one single road. It's one road. You can't use that for independent utility and break it up in three pieces. In Drake's own words, it's one road.
By crossing of water, I thought by the core regulations that are in the Federal Register, you go by crossings of water and locations.
And actually, that's a really good question to ask the merits. Their Federal Register publication actually says, and actually, I don't want to paraphrase it wrong. So let me quote it for you. Give me 1 second here. Individual channels in an irregularly shaped wetland or lake are not separate water bodies, and crossing of such features cannot be considered separately, unquote. So usually if you're crossing different water bodies, then it can be separate. This is the same water body. Every single ounce of water, everything on the east end there comes from at least about 100,000 acres of farmland that gets drained down into this lake. And that's why you have an inlet in the creek. The other smaller wetlands that are up to the Northmore, same thing. That water's not going anywhere else but Emusum Lake. And that's in the record. In regard to final agency action, the 2010 decision letter constitutes final agency action. One, it marks the consummation of the agency's decision-making process on the questions presented and answered. Two, the decision determines rights or obligations or from which legal consequences will flow as required by Bennett v. Spirit. The 2010 decision is the reason the tribe filed this lawsuit. In regard to the first decision, the 2010 decision marks the consummation of the Corps' decision-making process pertaining to new facts on the ground and new legal issues.
Well, counsel, very much of the 2010 letter is a recap of what's happened.
Absolutely it
is. What do you think's new in a decision?
Well, for example, it references our letter and our arguments 8 times. So pages 2 through 6, there is a recap, and in this complicated situation, you have to have a recap.
Yeah,
tribe, here's what we've done so far.
Where's the decision in here? Where do you think is the decision?
Well, okay. So if you take, I don't have the page number for you, but for example, there's an argument, I think it's on page 3, that says, you claim that this has been recaptured. We do not agree. And then it went on and explained why. Now, as federal courts, do you want the tribe to bring just an unlawful failure to act claim and that's it? Oh, they didn't say anything. There is no agency consideration, but they did consider things.
Had they previously told you that they weren't going to recapture before this 2010?
No, that's an issue unique to the tribe and unique to the tribe raising it for the first time to the Corps.
You say that the 2010 letter is the first time they, on page 3 in that paragraph, that they made a decision on recapture.
With 100% certainty, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, what's your next best paragraph in the letter?
National Historic Preservation Act, for example, that's at the end of the letter. They're saying none of this constitutes a permit, so under our default Appendix C, which has never been approved by the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, we are going to still use them, and under that, we only do the permit area. There's no permit here. It's exempt. Sorry, you're out of luck. There's no other letter in the record that says that.
Now, I got confused here. I don't think it was in your briefs.
Okay.
But the letter at the end says that any tribal rights are not affected by any of this. It's what they say. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, that's a general condition where they're saying if there's any tribal rights affected by this, please let us know. And so that is a general condition. But another general condition is number 20, for example, is that you cannot disturb tribal historic resources pursuant to the National Historic Preservation Act. General condition number 28, you cannot stack permits. So that's identifying another general condition on the last leg, the nationwide permit. Drake himself, he explains this as one project. This is one project, and the legal niceties don't work. You could try to say, oh, you're crossing separate water bodies, but you're not. Under their own Federal Register publication, they are crossing the same water that goes into Enemieston Lake.
Well, tell me about this in the federal regulation. It says for linear projects crossing a single water body, mm-hmm. That's what you're saying, several times at separate and distinct locations, each crossing is a single project. Mm-hmm. Is that what you think?
No, because if you
isn't
read
what the Federal Register says,
you need to read. I would urge you to read on. And the part I quoted to you earlier, there's an important qualification and a very important exception to that that says that's a general rule. But if it's the same water body, if it's an irregularly shaped wetland or lake, this is a huge wetland. It's irregularly shaped. So are the wetlands up there. That's the provision that applies. So you can't just go ahead and dice and slice this project up. That is one project. I'm going to reserve, unless there's other questions, I'm going to reserve my remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. May it please the court, Robert Lyman representing the Corps. All of the tribe's claims here either are barred by the statute of limitations or fail because they're challenging a non-final agency action, the 2010 letter. And I'll start with that letter first. The letter is not a decision. It does not announce a new exemption. It does not grant or deny a permit. It responds to the tribe's concerns. It explains the state of what has passed. It recaps what has gone on and says it's willing to continue to work with the tribe.
What about the middle paragraph on page 3 that he referred to 2 or 3 times?
Yes.
And I finally found it. Boy, that sounds like a decision. You contend that the activities must be recaptured. We cannot agree. We've carefully considered, nor do we find, we've assessed, we've done this. That paragraph sounds like agencies write decisions.
Two responses to that. First, when the agency responds to a legal argument like this, and this is very similar to the Center for Auto Safety, Independent Equipment Dealers, the AT&T case all from the D.C. Circuit that we cite. When the agency is asked a legal question, then gives an answer, here's the legal answer to that question. That doesn't establish, under Bennett versus Speer, the required consequence determination. It's a legal statement, but it alone is not a consequence or determination that affects the tribe's rights or, in this case, Mr. Drake's rights. The second point is this falls in the category of enforcement discretion. They're coming to the Corps saying, you need to do X, Y, Z to enforce the Clean Water Act against Drake, relating to these prior farm road exemption decisions, 2003 and 2006. Under Heckler versus Cheney, in this case, this court's decision in Missouri Coalition, that is trying to make the Corps take an action that is not a mandatory duty, rather it's discretionary, and it's the quintessential enforcement discretion. And so it's not reviewable, judicially reviewable under the APA for that reason, too. So first, I don't think it's final because there's no consequence, but second, even if it was final in some way in that respect, it's about enforcement discretion, and so it's not reviewable in an APA action either. Going back to the statute of limitations issue, district court here made very thorough findings that as of January 2005, the claim had accrued. This court reviews those for clear error. District court's findings and the process, the evidentiary hearings leading to those findings, were not erroneous in any way.
So what injury had the tribe suffered in January of 2005?
Well, the injury they would have suffered as of 2005 is their legal claim that the first farm road exemption was deficient. And to the extent, the only injury they describe, in addition to that, that there's a defect in that initial farm road exemption, is that the use changed later. But that falls into that same enforcement discretion problem. If the Corps' decision in 2003 was fine because he described an agricultural use, he's going to use it for cattle movement on his property, it doesn't then become defective when he changes the use. The question is just that 2003 decision. The question then is, does the Corps enforce or not? And that's a discretionary Corps decision.
Wouldn't the tribe have to be harmed by the failure, though? In other words, you know, the granting of an exemption alone, they may have known that that happened, but wouldn't they also have had to have been harmed by that?
Well, the other part of the district court's finding, I think, is that they had already heard at that point, and they heard the January 2005 meeting, discussion from Drake's neighbor that he was using this for development purposes. And so that's their theory. And so that is part of the January 2005 meeting. Two tribal representatives are there, and the tribe doesn't argue that they weren't representing the tribe or there's any problem with that. They're just saying it didn't come up and they didn't have a concrete enough injury. But the whole theory that they bring this case on, that the farm road exemptions were not really for a farm road, was floated at that meeting, and that's enough to start the statute of limitations. The other prong of statute of limitations argument that they make in their briefs is equitable tolling. We think the district court rejected that for factual reasons as well. If nothing else, by 2010, before the statute of limitations had run, they had this letter from the Corps. And so at that point, even on their theory, they had everything they needed to bring suit, and they still didn't make the 6-year deadline of early 2011. So there's no basis here for equitable tolling.
Was it 14 months after the letter that the suit was filed?
The letter is August 2010, and the suit is filed late 2011. So I think it's 14 months, but I don't have the date of
something
the initial
like
complaint. Right. The initial complaint was late 2011, and then there's an amended complaint. We're not claiming that we're taking the initial complaint date as the date they filed. There were changes in the complaint, but none material to the statute of limitations issue.
You mentioned equitable tolling.
Yes.
If we determine that the tribe is not entitled to equitable tolling, do we need to even address the issue of whether 2401 is jurisdictional?
No, you don't. The 2401A jurisdictional point, you don't need to address if you decide that tribe is not entitled to equitable tolling. An example of that is the D.C. Circuit's case in Felter. That was after Irwin, but before the Wong case, but the D.C. Circuit there is invited to rule on whether reconsider whether 2401A is jurisdictional. And the D.C. Circuit says, well, we don't have to do that because they're not entitled to equitable tolling here. And I think that's the easiest, straightforwardest way to resolve that issue. There was, to try to clear up some confusion about what happened in 2006 and 2009. 2006, there's another farm road exemption. We're not arguing statute of limitations with that. Their argument with respect to that is focused on whether we had to do NHPA consultation on that. Our argument is no, it was not an undertaking, not just under the Corps' definition, but under the Advisory Council's definition of undertaking. So this, any discrepancy between the Corps' regulations and the Advisory Council's regulations isn't implicated here because we're arguing now under the Advisory Council's definition, and we're saying it's not an undertaking. With respect to 2009, the NHPA process has been remanded to the Corps. So the nationwide permit is not properly before this court. The Corps has to first decide the first prong the district court identified, which is it the type of action that could trigger an impact? If it decides that it is, then it has to go through the consultation process under the NHPA with the tribe. The result of that is obviously unknown, and that's why appellate courts, when it's a remand decision from a district court to the agency to do more process, don't have jurisdiction to determine that. In any event, as to the merits of 2009, if the court is interested, we think our brief explains that about these two gully crossings, the nationwide permit determination was proper. This was not another farm road exemption. This is the point of time when Drake's application said, you know, as in 2008 and then leading to 2009, this isn't for agricultural purposes. This is for a new development of a home on the north side. And so the nationwide permit process was applied instead, and it wasn't a case of a misapplication of the farm road exemption at that point. So in sum, we think statute of limitations bars the 2003 arguments, no final agency action in 2010, 2009 is remanded, and with respect to 2006, the Corps' decision on that the exemption didn't trigger NHPA process was right. So I have plenty of time, but unless the court has
Let me ask you a question about the stacking. Now, I'm very confused. You heard my exchange with your opponent there. I'm very confused about what your Federal Register regulation really says about what is a single crossing of water, which is a single project. Can you help me on that?
Yes. Nationwide permit 14 is the one that was applied in 2009. Just I want to note really quick, we don't think this is properly before the court because of the remand issue, but answering your question. Nationwide permit 14 was the one the Corps applied. And in the federal, that's for linear transportation projects. And I think Your Honor quoted the regulation properly for that, which is not that everything on a single water body has to be part of a single project analysis, but rather, is it at the same location is part one. And we think, while sure, these are all on the same part of the lake, the roads at issue in 2003 and then in 2009, the gully crossing, are not at the same place. They're at different locations. We've got little arrows in our brief on page 6 that point to the 2009 gully crossing and the 2003 road exemption decision. So we've got a map there, but our brief, we've tried to identify where those different locations are.
What your opposing counsel was telling me that I don't have in front of me? He says there's a later provision of the Federal Register that reads a little differently.
I think that's a different nationwide permit. And I think our brief explains that. I don't think it's nationwide permit 14. And if it is related to nationwide permit 14, it's the first part and not a latter part. It's the part about first deciding, like, is it on the same water body? But the linear transportation project turns on the location and not every part of a project impacting a single water body must be considered simultaneously.
Thank you.
And the only other point I want to make about linear transportation projects is the idea of utility, which we explained in our brief as well. And the tribe, I don't think, has rebutted. The 2003 and 2006 farm road exemption decisions, they provided agricultural purposes. 2009 gully crossing was for this additional home. The purposes are different. They're independent. You can build the gully crossing to build the second home. You can improve the movement of your cattle. Those are not the same utility and or purpose. So unless the court has any further questions, we request that you affirm the district court.
Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. In regard to enforcement discretion, this is not an enforcement discretion case because the tribe prevailed down below on the enforcement discretion issue. The district court actually found in favor of us, saying federal courts review recapture issues, nationwide permit issues, all the time. These are final agency actions. In regard to the project, if this court is going to look at it through the eyes of final agency action, where you have an application and then you have a private letter of verification that's not shared with anybody, that paper review is probably going to lead you just to one result. If you will consider the facts on the ground that injured the tribe in 2009, when you have bulldozers leveling out 2,000 feet of lakeshore, we discover at that time this information. It's one project. It's one project as a matter of fact. The applicant is describing it as one project. The Corps has never explained how you can use a bridge in the middle of the wetland all by itself. It has independent utility. It does not. You have to take a look at our claims and the facts on the ground at a later date. It's not enforcement discretion. They didn't appeal that. We had prevailed.
On the statute of limitations, do you make an equitable tolling argument, or is it more of an equitable estoppel argument?
We believe it's equitable tolling because the tribe was misled. Face-to-face, we requested consultation. We got a government consultation, and we're asking them, well, the chairman is. He's saying, this is all bulldozed down. All 10, 30 acres, whatever acres are up there, all the shoreline is bulldozed down. You said it was for farm road up there. What's going on? And then they said, yeah, we know what it looks like, but it's for farm road. They told Senator Thune 6 months previous. They told the newspaper before that when they called, they said, yeah, we got information that he changed his intent. It's for a second residence. Well, they never told the tribe that. Well, tell the truth. Be honest. Their own core policy has a consultation guideline, and it says to be open, to be truthful, to have dialogue, and to deliberate together. That just didn't occur here. That sort of lack of consultation, the lack of honesty, should not be rewarded in the context of an equitable tolling. The tribe was misled. I see I'm out of town. This is other questions.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions today, and thank you for your time. We urge that we can pursue our claims on remand.
We appreciate your arguments as well as your opposing counsel and your briefs. Case will be submitted and decided in due course.